Have the meeting, the minutes in front of us, I believe.
I'll so move approval.
Senator Day moves approval of the minutes of March 18th, 2009. All who are in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes are approved as received. First bill is Senator Saltzman indicated she would defer to Senator Wieger. So, Senator Wieger, do you want to come forward? Senate File 21. Fill that out for me. Senator Wieger, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 21 addresses the establishment of a P20 education partnership. Last session, this bill was before you, and it actually did pass both the House and Senate. It was vetoed not because of this provision, but it was a part of an omnibus bill. So it should be familiar. The thrust of the proposal is that we would combine planning with early childhood, K-12, and higher ed with various groups. The P-16 Council is a group that currently meets, and this bill adds legislative membership, two from the Senate, two from the House, and that basically is what we have again to make that proposal, though I do have an amendment that Council's prepared that would update it for purposes needed.
Senator Wieger, since this is not the committee of origin, before I ask a member to offer it on your behalf, would you just tell us what this does?
Madam Chair, I haven't seen the final copy of the amendment, but I believe it states that the Department of Education would be the entity where the funds your committee would be concerned, of course, as to how the activities of this entity would be processed. And this identifies the Department of Education, and that would be the thrust of it. And in fact, that is the case right now. The Department of Ed is providing the services. In practice, it rotates whoever's chairing the partnership and among MNSCU, the U of M, and the Department of Ed. This would continue that practice in the short term and then allow flexibility as the partnership deems appropriate.
Senator Wieger, does this amendment also then bring your bill into compliance with our guidelines?
Madam Chair, it's my understanding.
Mr. Bodern.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Are there questions on the A2 amendment? Senator Roebling?
I just am trying to understand, I mean, maybe it's more relative to the bill, but we're only naming legislators for sure, and then the other members are a little more vague, right? I mean, it says that they're chief executives, presidents, or other formally designated leaders of their respected organizations. We're not giving a list of who those should be.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, that's correct. We aren't listing them. In fact, there is a P-16 partnership now, and those persons are identified. This would include the legislative branch, which is deemed as best practices by the Education Commission of States.
Senator Roebling moves the A2 amendment. Any discussion on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Are there further questions on Senate File 21 for Senator Wieger? Senator Rolsing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Wieger, your two bills are, you know, they're kind of similar. Is your long-term goal to have the E-16 merge with the P-20, or you plan to keep those separate in the future?
Senator Wieger.
Madam Chair, Senator Olsen, each bill has the same intent in terms of better aligning the planning for early learning, K-12, and higher ed, and it provides some menu options for the Policy and Finance Committee to consider. And I'm not sure yet what would be the best approach. I like what the current P20 group is doing. And in fact, you know, there's different references, P16 or P20 and that, but what we're talking about for any of this is early learning, K-12 and higher ed, coordinating more efficiently. And I think the bill that is up after this one is rather prescriptive with a number of specific things, but it has primarily a legislative involvement in that. And so I thought it would be more appropriate to be more prescriptive because we've identified many of these things to be done. In the case of the current P20 group, where we would add some legislators, they do have a work plan. There's four or five task forces, and I didn't want to be so presumptive as to give them a different charge.
So, Senator Weger, what's a 20? What does that mean?
Madam Chair, it refers to the higher ed component that after 12th, you graduate in 12th grade, that you would have, go perhaps 4 years or beyond through graduate school. But it looks at, it's a reflection, sort of a state-of-the-art reference to the higher ed portion of school.
That's 8 years of graduate school or 8 years of?
Post-secondary.
Post-secondary?
And, Madam Chair, it's the Education Commission of states and many other states that have been looking at this type of model have referred to it as P20, E20. It's not as significant whether it's 16 or 20, but a suggestion.
Okay. Senator Rolstein.
A follow-up, if I may, Madam Chair. So, Senator Weger, then there ultimately there would be one or the other, but not both, or do you see both of them being in place? Or
Senator,
hopefully both? Or
Senator
Weger. Madam Chair, Senator Olsen, realistically, it's probably one that we'd end up with, and that's something we'll find out further during the legislative process. I might add that the current P16 Council has extended invitation for legislators to be there, but while we're in session, when they meet during session hours, it makes it very difficult. So by formalizing that partnership, it might be more user-friendly.
Anybody else? Senator Weger, the Finance Committee has requested this bill, but I want you to know that because it has legislators on it, that you may want to, whatever one goes forward from the Finance Committee, you may want to make it travel separately if you don't want the K-12 bill to go to the Committee on Rules for action on adding legislators to a commission or advisory committee. So you may want to keep this bill, keep in mind that by adding legislators, the Rules Committee would have the authority to bring that bill into the Rules Committee. I mean that whole bill.
Understood.
I mean they will take this one, but they may bring that whole bill by putting putting legislators on it. Senator Roebling.
By adding the amendment and saying that there is no compensation or reimbursement for expenses, does it still have to go to finance? I don't know that it has any expense left in it.
Senator Roebling, the Finance Committee, I believe even with this amendment on it, has requested both of these bills so that the K-12 or maybe higher ed finance committees can both look at it.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, I believe that's the ultimate conduit for its next destination. Then it gets processed probably to higher ed.
Madam Chair.
Senator Day.
I would move Senator Weger's bill.
Okay, Senator Weger. Senator Day moves that Senate File 21 is amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Weger. Now we have 954.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Senate File 954 addresses the same overall subject for coordination among early learning, K-12 and higher ed. In this approach, it would form a committee, an oversight committee, primarily composed of legislators four from the Senate, four from the House, and as well there would be five additional members, and I have an amendment to include representative from the higher Office of Higher Learning, and Mr. Bodern has prepared an amendment that does that, and also
that's what gets it to 13.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Because the bill only has 12.
12.
Yeah.
Okay. So I thank Mr. Bodern for catching that, and this would be in the form that I'd like it to be.
This also is the second committee, so would you just explain, we know we've gone to 12 to 13, but who you're adding and then what the rest of the amendment does.
The Madam Chair committee, the amendment adds the Director of Higher Ed Services to make sure we have the post-secondary part of education included. And as you're aware, the governor has made that position a member of the cabinet, so we have that. And then we put in dates. We didn't have the some deadlines on the appointments, and so we ask for the appointments to be made for the Oversight Committee by July 1, 2009. And then there's various subcommittees, and those would be appointed by August 1, 2009. And then regarding the staff support meeting space, we identify the department, the Commissioner of Education, at this point, so that there's an entity where we would name where it would go, but you know, that would be subject to change. And as Senator Olsen said, we still have to have further discussion in policy and finance, but it's initially proposed at the Department of Education level. And Madam Chair, I just want to mention that this is the inspiration of the Growth and Justice organization. Dr. Angie Eilers is here, and I believe they distributed a report that's available that gets more into the substance of why it's being recommended, but this is the vision that they have, and the bill would have a very ambitious work plan, and then the group would sunset in 2010.
Thank you, Senator Wieger. And I understand that the bill actually was withdrawn from the Committee on Education and sent here, so this is the Committee of Origin. So, Senator Roebling, this is an author's amendment.
Right, and I'll move it, but I just wanted to correct something, if that'd be okay, incorporated in the motion. The director, it's not the Higher Education Services Office anymore, it's the Office of Higher Education. They flipped their name around a couple of years back.
So it's now OHE,
right?
Right. That correction, Mr. Bonner, you make that.
Madam Chair, then on the amendment on page 1, line 3, after or before higher, insert office of, and on line 4, delete everything before the semicolon.
That is Senator Roebling's motion. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Is there anyone on the committee that would like to hear testimony on the bill or has any questions? Senator Day.
Madam Chair, I'll move the bill. I wished his 3-1 in the Senate would have been maybe 2-1, but so be it. But I'll move the bill.
Okay. Senator Day moves that Senate File 954 is amended, be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Wieger. Senator Saltzman.
Thank you.
Is she in the room? Senator Saltzman brings us Senate File 1052. I see at the top that this was referred to the Committee on Finance, but was this withdrawn and sent here first, or is this a second stop?
Yes, this is the first stop, Madam Chair. It was referred to this committee as a first stop.
Okay. Senator Saltzman, do you have any amendments?
Yes, I do.
And why don't we get those on the
and
bill
that
first?
Is an oral amendment, and Mr. Bodern has it. If he would explain it for me, please.
Madam Chair and Senator Saltzman, The oral amendment would be to include the public employee insurance plan in the study. And the way that could be accomplished would be on page 1, line 9 of the bill, delete paren CGIP, comma, either, and insert or the public employee insurance plan or both, period. For purposes of the study, the school district employees may be, and then on line 10, delete the CGIP and insert those plans, and after or, insert considered. And then on line 11, delete the CGIP and insert either plan. And on line 12, delete CGIP and insert plans.
That's a rather long oral amendment, Senator Salzman.
Yes, it is, Madam Chair. But I had wanted to just add.
But maybe what Mr. Bodern could do for us, since this is also two long sentences, would you read to us what the corrected language would be now? So, and the deal here is just to refer to plans rather than specifically to CGIP. Is that the real intent of making these changes?
On that point, Madam Chair, it's to allow some greater flexibility. So it's not just CGIP, but that we leave it open, that it also could be PEEP.
Okay, and what is PEEP?
The Public Employee Insurance Plan.
Mr. Bodern, could you read that, and then Senator Roebling will offer the amendment as an author, on behalf of the author.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if the proposed amendment is adopted, the bill would read, the Commissioner of Finance, in consultation with other relevant state agencies and interested parties, shall study issues related to the inclusion of school district employees in the State Employee Group Insurance Plan or the Public Employee Insurance Plan or both. For purposes of the study, the school district employees may be combined with other persons currently covered by those plans or considered as a separately rated group for premium purposes in a plan administered by the commissioner and based upon either plan. The study must include an analysis of costs, reserve requirements, and other regulatory issues, effects on the plans, and so forth. The rest of the bill is unamended.
And we've heard that motion on behalf of the author. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. Senator Salzman, would you like to explain why you want to do this?
Yes, Madam Chair. Senate File 1052 was a bill that was introduced last year and was heard in the Education Committee, and there have been efforts over the years to institute a mandatory statewide health care plan for teachers, and it has always raised a lot of questions and controversy. And last year, after the plan had failed and or else been vetoed by the governor, it seemed appropriate that there's always a lot of questions of how would this work. And people have asked in the past about including teachers in CGIP as, well, what if? And so my bill last year was, well, let's study it and see what it looks like. And I worked with, I believe, Commissioner Awada last year before the Department of Employee Relations was merged with our finance department, and worked with her, and she had expressed great interest in doing this. Last year when I worked with her on this, she at the time felt that they could do this without additional cost to the state, but again, to answer questions. So this was offered as an amendment last year on the floor and failed. But what I found interesting is that this year that Education Minnesota has come forward and now suggested that we look at this again, that their proposal is to include teachers in CGIP. And again, I think that it's appropriate that we study that issue. I know that state employees have contacted me. They're very concerned about that and cost on them. So again, before we move forward, it would behoove us to look at this issue and study the potential impact and cost and possibilities. So that's the purpose of my bill, is to have a thoughtful discussion about this. It's not necessarily endorsing it or suggesting that it's not a good idea, but I think having more information in front of us would help us make this decision.
Senator Saltzman, sometimes when we have studies like this, and it's not necessary here, but we, in our guidelines, when we ask people to make reports to the legislature, we also ask them to come up with, as part of their results, any recommendations that they might have to the legislature, including possible changes in statutory language. And that is, the purpose of doing that is to really pinpoint and focus what their recommendations might be, so that the legislators don't start from ground zero on that. Would you be amenable to that kind of sentence added to the provision added to yours? I mean, it doesn't mean we have to take mm-hmm. them, but at least the work is done
absolutely,
by
Madam Chair.
That group.
Well, on that point, I would just say, Madam Chair, that is an excellent idea, and I really appreciate that. I would be very happy to have that
sometimes
amended
on to. Sometimes we forget that when we have these studies, but I think
it's excellent because that's where we look at the data. But to have the people who are most involved in this issue to suggest how it might work would be very, very helpful to us.
Mr. Bodern, could you either add a clause or after on results of the study that would do something like that for us?
Madam Chair, on page 1, line 15 of the bill, before the period, you could insert including proposed legislation, comma, if necessary.
Results of the study, including proposed legislation, if necessary. Okay. Senator Roebling?
I will move the bill.
Senator Roebling moves that amendment.
Only amendment.
Mr. Bonner.
One other small suggestion in keeping with some of the other amendments the committee has made might be to specify who the report should be made to. I notice it's made to the legislature. You might want to specify the chairs.
Senator Saltzman, the chairs of the appropriate committees with jurisdiction over, this has to be here as well,
mm-hmm.
State and local government operations and committees on education.
I think that would be appropriate, and perhaps, Madam Chair, I think commerce, is commerce involved? I know in the past they have been, but
not
that's
to receive
maybe,
this report.
Not
to
this
think.
Report, absolutely. Thank you. That would be an excellent inclusion.
Mr. Bodern is
piece to include.
What do you want to say here?
Madam Chair, you could, on page 1, line 14, delete legislature and insert the chairs and ranking minority members of the legislative committees and divisions with jurisdiction over. I think you had state and local government and education.
Yes. Senator Roebling?
I would move that amendment, Madam Chair.
We've heard the amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Any questions at this point or comments from members to Senator Saltzman? Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to speak either in favor or in opposition to this proposal? Welcome to the committee. If you identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Richard Kajewski. I'm the Legislative Affairs Director for MAPE. And on behalf of AFSCME and MAPE, AFSCME is in another hearing testifying at this time. We are not in support of the bill studying as it's written today, that includes CGIP. We do support the Education Minnesota bill that is making its way through committees. As you may or may not know, Senator Bach did a bill trying to include school districts as part of the CGIP plan, and it is still sitting in that committee. It was laid on the table. There's all sorts of difficulties that were expressed with doing that in that committee, and we think obviously one of them is the reserves that would be needed to include additional people and where that money would come from. Another big piece, at least for us, is that the collective bargaining process for state unions is every 2 years. The collective bargaining process for school districts does not fall during those same time frames. And to make a real strong point, we have a statutory right to collectively bargain over health insurance and their costs. And this would severely impede that process by
having a study impedes a process.
having a study to include them into CJIP because that would allow them to bargain at times when the other state unions are not bargaining.
This is a study.
I'm aware of that, Madam Chair. But the study at the end of the bill there, and we're out of copies here, so I don't have it in front of me, but at the end of the bill there, Madam Chair, is a study, obviously, including the amendment that may include proposed legislation to include them in there. I'm just suggesting that that legislation was already done this session by Senator Bach.
Well, the recommendations might be not to include them. The study, the report doesn't prescribe, is where I read it, that doesn't prescribe what the recommendations may be. It may be totally inappropriate. I mean, they may find it's not appropriate at all to do that. That's a legitimate finding.
Madam Chair, members, I think that's the position we're taking, is that the issues with including them into the state employee group insurance plan don't make it all that feasible and poses a lot of difficulties in doing so. Having said that, that was expressed in a bill this session by Senator Bach in committee, and that's why we're just not in favor of studying it again. I don't think, in our position, there's no need to have the study.
Confess, I don't see the harm. Ms. Allswiger.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota, and I would, I won't repeat all of the comments that he has made, but we would agree with the previous testifier with Senator Bach's bill that went through and seemed to have little interest in Senate Commerce. I think that these issues have been debated in a number of ways. The other statewide health insurance bill is going forward. I think this is just another bill to take the attention away from the others that are actually moving forward. I do want to clarify that Education Minnesota is not pushing a bill or any kind of concept where we would go into CGIP. That was stated previously. Our bill is one that would go into PEEP, and that is receiving bipartisan support in the Senate, and so we don't want to move backwards by going to a study, and we also think that there may be some costs that at a time like this we need to move forward quickly. Thank you.
Sure. Anyone else wish to speak in favor or in opposition to Senate File 1052? Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dennis Fent. I'm a teacher in North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale. I've been a teacher for the last 36 years, a member of Ed Minnesota for the last 30 years.
Thank you for your service. We often say that to veterans from the military, but the thanks and gratitude of the state to all of our teachers is also well-deserved.
Well, you're extremely welcome. It's been a pleasure, every bit of it, so I wouldn't do a single thing differently. I do want to, and I appreciate this opportunity to speak in support of this bill. I thank you for hearing it. I thank Senator Saltzman for authoring it. It was authored last year. I wish it had been approved at that time. Had it been approved at that time, we today would have the data, the information that we need. Please keep in mind the bill that's currently being proposed by Education Minnesota mandates 200,000 lives into PEEP. It doesn't make it available. It doesn't make it a voluntary process. It mandates it. In my field, in the education profession, we are required to make decisions based on data, data-based decisions. All I believe this bill is asking, as Madam Chair already said, this is a study. How in the world could we expect to mandate hundreds of thousands of lives into a program and answer to them later saying we didn't bother to take the time to look at the data, to do the study, to find the appropriate information? I could go on for a long time. I know you don't have that time, but I do want to strongly recommend this bill. And again, thank Senator Saltzman and all of you for hearing it.
Thank you, Mr. Fent. Sir, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schneider. I went on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and we, too, would support this bill. We believe that the bill is very simple and very straightforward, and it requires the study to be done. And we believe that those results will give districts adequate information that they need to look at this option. If it doesn't work, then that the report will tell us that, and then we'll move forward. But I think that we want to be able to see what's available. We believe more options are better than one option, and I think this piece does that for us.
Thank you, sir. Are there questions or comments for Senator Salzman? Senator Roebling, we'll start with you.
No, Madam Chair, I'm willing to move the bill as amended if it's appropriate time.
Let's see
time.
If there's other comments. Senator Carlson?
Mr. Chair, and last speaker, I didn't catch your name. From the School Boards Association?
Kirk Schneiderwind.
Mr. Schneiderwind?
Schneiderwind.
Okay, Mr. Schneiderwind and Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair. How many school districts today do not offer health insurance?
Mr. Schneider,
Madam Chair, I don't have that information for you, but I could certainly get that to you.
Madam Chair,
Senator Carlson,
but there are some that do not offer health insurance at all.
Mr. Schneiderwin,
Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, I'm not sure of that statistic. I believe there's been some information shared about that, but I'm not sure of the number.
Senator Salzman, do you know? Are there any districts that don't have health insurance?
You know, perhaps it's Education six. Minnesota, it is six, I understand.
Six.
It is six, okay. And that's where I believe, you know, this bill is not to say we shouldn't have a statewide health insurance plan. And I think that when you hear that the people who are on the front line, our school board members, are very split on this, our teachers are very split on this, and the point of this, had we been able to pass this bill last session, the governor vetoed the statewide health insurance plan, we'd be able to have a much better discussion right now. I'm not going to suggest the governor is going to veto this other bill. I've not been involved with that. I've been trying to find information. But should that happen, this, again, would at least move the topic forward with some better information. So that is my intent.
Senator Salzman, I support the Education Minnesota on the statewide insurance and have for a number of years. I don't see this bill, however, as in competition with my support for that. Senator Roebling?
I would like to move the bill, Madam Chair.
Is there anybody else that wants to say anything? Mm-hmm. Seeing none, Senator Roebling moves that Senate File 1052 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. All who are in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Senator Rummel. Now, Senator Rummel, I understand you have two bills, and you want to amend one into the other. Is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Would you like to inform us how you want to do that?
Madam Chair and committee members, first of all, thank you for hearing. It is now Senate File 1113. This is a bill about good governance.
Is that the base bill that you want us to look
yes,
at?
Yes, please.
Okay, so we have Senate File 1113.
Since this is the first time the bill is being heard, I'd like to offer the A2 Delete All Amendment, which mm-hmm. puts the bill in the form that reflects my intent. And I'd like to thank Mr. Bodern and my legislative assistant because they worked late into the night to put the bill back together. It has been pulled apart and put together a number of times, and in the process we lost some pieces in Mr. Bodern.
And this is the Committee of Origin, right? It hasn't been heard before?
It has not been heard before.
Okay, and what this does is to, again, put 1109 into
1113
and to make whatever other corrections that you want. Is that right?
That's right, Madam
Chair.
Okay,
so we're setting aside a Senate File 1109.
Yes.
And we have in front of us a delete all for Senate File 1113. Senator Carlson moves adoption of the A2 amendment. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted on behalf of the author. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. I believe you've already heard a bill similar to this this morning. The way my bill works, really, it does two things. Section 1 creates a commission on the future of education, and Section 2 establishes a center basically for education research and innovation. In Section 1, the commission, the role of the commissioner, the job of the commission is, in big terms, is first to create a clearinghouse that collects and coordinates information, that's Subdivision 5, and then it coordinates research requests from the legislature in Section 6. The second thing the commission does is create a think tank, with its first and most initial responsibility being to prepare a 10-year strategic plan for public education in Minnesota. Excuse me. And I just came from the hearing on the arts legacy dollars, and sitting in that hearing for the last 2.5 hours and seeing the breadth of educational activities that are occurring outside of the traditional K-12 purview, the what we normally do, it is intriguing to me that we haven't coordinated all the kinds of things that contribute to our students' education, and a strategic plan would do that for us, among other things. And finally, the commission oversees the Center for Research and Innovation. We have to give Dr. McQuaid the credit for the acronym that she created for that center, because she calls it the Legislative Education Analysis, Research, and Navigation in the Next Generation, to create the word learning. But basically, it's a center for education and for research and analysis and policy guidance. Why do we need the bill is what's important to me. And I believe it's a bill about good governance and efficacy. You know, if we don't know where we're going, we'll never know if we get there. And right now in education, accountability is huge, but we can't be accountable unless we know if we're getting where we want to go. And a strategic plan would be a first big step toward answering that question. Education is the largest part of our budget, and we are responsible for huge dollars. And right now, it seems to me we are doing it in a way that is not as efficient as it could be. Most of us have probably, if you've been lucky, had the opportunity to teach a young child how to ride a two-wheeler bike. And if you, at least in my experience, the first thing the children do is look at their feet, and they wobble back and forth, and they wobble back and forth. When you can convince them to lift up their chins and to look out into the distance, they can move forward. Often in the way our legislative process in the short 5 months that we get to work together as a legislature, we are working on multiple proposals that deal with a wide range of education reform, anything from early childhood education, all-day K, choice, high-stakes testing. These things are presented to us and lobbied for in a legislative environment that's burdened with time pressures, information overload, fragmented decision-making process. In addition, the legislature lacks the institutional capacity to sort through the conflicting studies and use to support the various competing educational reform and school improvement proposals. We simply don't have the full time and the resources to vet all of the data that is put before us. And this commission and center would help us do that. We rely heavily on the Office of Legislative Accountability. Is that right? The Legislative Auditor, excuse me, to help us evaluate some of our reforms. What's unfortunate about that is the evaluation comes after reforms have begun, and often at quite a good deal of expense. And I'm always amazed that as soon as the legislator auditor gives us a report, how quickly new legislation generates to correct the mistake. What I'm hoping we could do with this commission and this center is to anticipate and to avoid some of the pitfalls that we fall into which is how I think we will save a good deal of money and time. So this bill helps us avoid any piecemeal approach, the time that gets consumed, and the energy and resources. So I think that during these difficult deficit years, it seems to me that with very limited investment, we can bring both energy and stability to our public education policy and strengthen the work we do. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair Roble, I have a couple of questions. Senator Day, I noted that taking notice of your comment about Senator Wieger's bill. We probably should have corrected that one, too.
Madam Chair.
I think there should be four from the Senate and four from the House. These kinds of groups should not be dominated by one political party, and I think it should be two members from the majority and two members from the minority in each body. And I would ask Senator Carlson to move that as an amendment on lines 1-9 and 1-11 with the accompanying language. Mr. Bodden?
Madam Chair, on page 1, line 10 of the bill, I was looking at another issue with the bill here.
It would have to be, at line 1-8, it would have to be increasing it to 17 members, too.
And Madam Chair, the wish is to add one member from the minority and each from each body?
Yes.
Okay. So, yes, on page 1, line 8, delete 15 and insert 17. And on page 1, line 10, delete one member and insert two members. And the same thing on line 12.
Right.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I think we need on 1.9, we need to delete 3 and put 4. Mm-hmm.
As well as on line 1.11.
Yes. So it's 4 from each, and then including two members and two members of the minority. Senator Rummel, do you have any problem with that?
I guess not, Madam Chair. No, this is fine with me because it does have a 10-year life, and I think that creates stability and fairness. We were trying to keep the numbers low, that's all.
I understand. Senator Carlson moves that amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And Mr. Bodden, I have another item, but do you have a technical amendment?
Madam Chair, and I think I have the language ready. The committee may wish to discuss it. On page 1, line 20, well, beginning on line 19, this deals with the terms of membership for the legislative appointees, and this is something I hadn't noticed until now, but this provides for 4-year terms for those members, and I assume the intent would be that their membership on the committee would expire if they're no longer serving in the legislature.
Right. And the speaker has to renew their appointments every 2 years anyway, don't they?
Madam Chair, the way the bill is written right now, it would be an appointment by the speaker to serve a 4-year term for members, for the House members who are appointed.
But Senator Rummel, what if there's a change in speakers? I don't see how one speaker could determine if there's a change in the leadership, an appointment for I think you'd have to have the speaker to reaffirm those appointments. It works in the Senate, but it wouldn't work in the House.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Bodden, can you suggest a way of fixing that?
Madam Chair, you could clarify that the Senate members are appointed to 4-year terms or until they are no longer serving in the Senate, whichever is sooner. And then you could do for the House, provide 2-year terms or until the member is no longer serving in the House, whichever is sooner. If that sounds agreeable, I can provide the language.
Senator Carlson moves that language. Senator Rummel?
Madam Chair, is it possible that the representatives from the House could serve additional terms?
They're not. Your bill doesn't preclude them from being reappointed.
Okay.
But it does respect the power of the authority of the Speaker.
Thank you.
Mr. Bodden, could you kind of read that again?
Sure. Beginning on page 1, line 20, after administration, insert, shall serve 4-year terms or until the member is no longer serving in the Senate, whichever is sooner. And then on after the and, members of the House of Representatives appointed by the Speaker of the House shall serve 4-year terms or until the member is no longer serving in the House, comma, whichever is sooner.
That's Senator Carlson's amendment motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Now, here's my problem. Lines 126 through 130. You have a rotation of the chair and vice chair, and you have the every 2 years, the vice chair assumes the position of the chair, and a new vice chair would be elected. But you say that the chair will alternate among a citizen member and a member of the House and member of the Senate. But if the person is supposed to be moving up, and you say that when the chair is from one member, as a member of one body, the vice chair has to be a member of the other body, what happens to the citizen? When is the citizen ever going to be able to chair this group?
This was drafted by our legal counsel, and I was concerned about that, too, and I did not get back to her on that, and I agree with you.
Senator Carlson is going to move to delete
paragraph
starting on line, well, no, but starting on line 129, after the period, and then delete line 30. So that the group would have to have, when it's a citizen member, it'll have to have a member of the House or a member of the Senate as the vice chair, who would then move up, and then they could, as long as the chair is determined, then they can have whoever they want among each body moving up into that position every 2 years.
That makes sense to me.
We have the Carlson motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Is there anyone who wishes to speak in favor or in opposition to Senator Rummel's bill? Can I say something?
Madam Chair, I have Dr. Robichaud from Mankato State University.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Robichaud, member of the AMSD Board of Directors, Minnesota Association of Metropolitan School Districts, as well as a associate professor at Minnesota State University, Mankato, Department of Education Leadership. I have also served in different administrative duties as a school superintendent, director of special ed for the last 30 years. And I really want to thank you for the opportunity to come and speak in favor of the Senate File 113 that has now been amended, 1113, thank you, creating a legislative and a citizens commission on the future of education. Every citizen in the state of Minnesota is impacted by education. It is the one organization in our state that will enable and create a sustainable and viable society. Again, each of us is directly affected and has had some experience in formal or informal education. I just want to make about four comments in support of this this bill that has been introduced. First of all, it creates a structure for ongoing, evidence-based, sound research that will provide the legislature with data to make good decisions on public policy regarding K-12 education. No such structure, to my knowledge, exists in the state of Minnesota. There's segments across the state, but there's no constant structure. Moreover, the structure will allow, as presented in this bill, for broad-based stakeholder participation. Again, no current structure exists that we're aware of. Further, it provides a structure to assist in the development of what the future of pre-K-12 education will look like in the state of Minnesota. As Senator Rummel has indicated, it will provide a long-range picture, a roadmap that will enable legislators and public policy to develop good public policy based on sound data, and what should the future look like in public education in the state of Minnesota? To some degree, with all due respect, across many organizations, policy is developed even at the local level based on what's in the most recent newspaper. We expect our school leaders, our teachers, and other individuals to make sound decisions based on good data. We should have our public policy built on the same foundation of good, sound public and research data. The commission can and will allow the legislature to develop a K-12 educational policy that is meant to address a more effective and efficient educational system. This could potentially be cost-saving and without negatively impacting the quality of Minnesota's education. The commission would develop an independent analysis of research to assist, again, in the development of that educational policy. And lastly, the commission will develop a structure to assure the citizens and, more importantly, the students will be guaranteed of a quality education now and in the future and not be continually subject to the uncertainties of what's happening in our educational system. They need to be assured that there will be classes offered next year that, and that there will be quality teachers standing in front of them now and in the future, and that we'll be able to retain high-quality educational teachers. We owe it to our students to be proactive. We need to take our educational system off of the roller coaster, the starting and stopping based on what is happening in the environment, and place it on a stable, positive roadmap that will allow us to know where we're going to go in the next 10 years regarding public education in the state of Minnesota. The bill, as has been introduced and authored by Senator Rummel, will allow us to do that. And I thank you very much for the opportunity to speak on behalf of this this bill.
Any questions or comments? Welcome to the committee. Oh, I'm sorry, Senator. Welcome to the committee. If you identify yourself for the
record. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. My name is Angie Eilers. I'm the Research and Policy Director at Growth and Justice. And I'd like to endorse the previous speaker and Senator Rummel, and to applaud Senator Rummel and her vision for setting forward a stabilized institution that incorporates research and evidence into the decision-making process around education policy. And for three obvious and critical reasons. One is that research is available to us. It's not made very easily accessible. This is a town in which at one end of the university we have a decision-making body, and at the other end of University Avenue we have a research institution, and the meeting of those two ends of the University Avenue sometimes seem difficult. To have easier access and thorough use of the terrific resources that our taxpayers have already paid for would be obviously an efficiency move, but certainly toward effectiveness. The second obvious reason for incorporating more research into our educational decision-making processes is that any good empirical-based decision is going to critically inform both the process and the outcome of any kind of high-performing education system. And thirdly, it's been my observation that those states that have established an institution and also a culture and a policy expectation for using research in the policy-making process, that they have achieved four enviable qualities, those being transparency, efficiency, efficacy, and the trust in the public system. So it is with that I again applaud and endorse this bill and look forward to its moving forward.
Thank you. Senator Gerlach, Mr. Bodern had another technical amendment.
Madam Chair, on page 1, line 28 of the amendment, it refers to the rotation of the chair and refers to a citizen member. If you delete citizen and insert public, that would be consistent with the membership description.
Senator Carlson moves on line 28 to delete citizen and insert public. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Now, questions or comments for Senator Rummel or her witnesses? I'll start with Senator Gerlach, then Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Rummel. I've got three items, I guess, that I wanted to run past you. And the first one is we've done this in the past. We've had commissions on, let's just take, for example, healthcare. If we focused and said we want a commission just to study public health, we would be disregarding, we'd just be taking a sliver of the issue. We'd be disregarding all of the entire private market insurance, all everything that's going on out in the entire world of healthcare. Your bill here says it's limited just to public education. Education is a public good, regardless of who provides it, whether it's public or private, or homeschool, or whatever, any of the whole range of educational options. The outcome is for an educated society. Why are you picking just one sliver of education and disregarding the rest? How are we going to get a good picture on what a good public policy should be if we're only looking at one piece?
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Senator Gerlach. That was not my intention. You came in late. I just came from the hearing on the arts funding, and earlier in January, I was at a national meeting on education. From the arts funding meeting, it was very clear to me, the testimony that we got, that our public education system, and I should probably maybe drop the word education, except it sounds so big, but our education of our children, maybe we should take the word public out. So I'm open to that. The theme that came out from these testifiers, and I heard the same theme at the national meeting, is in 10 years we will not recognize education in Minnesota or in the country. And what's emerging is collaborations across communities on behalf of the education of all our children. So if you would like me to take the word public out, I'd be open to that.
Well, Madam Chair,
Senator Gerlach.
I just think that education is important across the board, and so I would propose that on line 1.4 that the word public be stricken, and it just is the Citizen Commission on the Future of Education.
Are there any other comments on that before us?
Mr. Bodern, is that the only place where There are a number of other places where public is in here.
Madam Chair, there are a number of other spots. You could just provide me with direction to make the conforming change in the name of the
Senator Gerlach,
commission.
Would that be your motion?
That would be my motion, Madam Chair.
And Madam Chair, there is one other spot where it's not in the name. On page 1, line 7, there's the responsibility to develop a plan on the future of public education.
On the future of education.
Madam Chair, can I ask a question? The
Senator Rummel.
The idea of this came out of my work in the K-12 Finance Committee, which, how broad is their scope? Is it all education or is it public education? I suppose this commission is to serve really that committee.
Well, Senator Rummel, in your lines 16 through 18, you do talk about early elementary, secondary, or post-secondary education. So it seems to me that the broad brush is exactly what you're talking about here. Senator Carlson, do you have a reaction to Senator Gerlach's?
Yes. Madam Chair, I'd like to ask Senator Gerlach if I understand his initiative right here. I think the output of this is more affecting public education simply because that's all we can affect. But the input would be all education, I would think. It would be to study anything, like Senator Rummel was saying, that in her description of the arts is that she's seeing a lot of things that are outside of the education community that are contributing. And what I would understand this to do is to look at all sources of education, public, private, homeschool, anything, and then it would generate what we should be doing in public education that would take the best practices of all of those, and only because we can affect public education. We would not want this to mandate into private education, I wouldn't think.
Senator Gerlach.
Well, Madam Chair, we do, in fact, have make impacts on education. I serve on the Education Committee, and we regulate homeschools. We regulate some aspects of private education. There's certainly in higher education. We have all kinds of different things we do. We have the state grant program that benefits private schools. We have there's just a whole range of things. Education is a large issue that impacts so much, that both on the inputs and the outputs. So, no, we, as legislature, we do regulate all aspects of education.
Mm-hmm. Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair and Senator Gerlach, I understand that. But I'm not sure if you're looking at more regulation of the non-public education. And it seems to me that that might be an unintended consequence here.
Well, Madam Chair,
Senator Gerlach.
The assumption would be that Senator Carlson making is that there's more regulation. This commission could come back and say that in certain areas there might be less regulation required.
Exactly. You can't assume that. Same as way regulation. As that other study.
As a matter of fact, Senator Rest and Senator Gerlach and Senator Carlson, uh-huh. What my hope is that we will have an integrated approach to education in Minnesota that integrates the community, that integrates the arts, that integrates the private-public partnerships that are occurring. The pattern of the way we deliver education is evolving, and it's evolving very fast. When I was growing up, and my dad was teaching us to drive, and in those days, the highways weren't as crowded as they are today, and we could drive 70 miles an hour. And he'd say, you've got to be looking a mile down the road to be prepared. There's a rapid change going on right now, and rather than Minnesota playing catch-up to those changes, I think we need to take some time out and look at what's happening in our environment. Certainly, we've heard from our demographer. We've heard from other people in our state. All the different impacts, whether it's technology or finances, that are affecting the way we deliver education. And this commission is going to take that, my hope, that broad brush look at what are all the resources that we have to deliver education, how can we integrate and coordinate them to deliver a better product, and make sure that the children who are not served well are served well, and what are the strategies that help us serve them well, and the children who are served well, that they are served very well. So that's the intent of the commission. It's a broad brush look.
Senator Rummel, I think that there is a message in what we name things. And I agree with, I'm going to support Senator Gerlach's motion. I think that it is not just public education, but from your discussion, what you mean is truly education. I think that would be a good change. Senator Roebling, did you have a comment?
And I was just going to comment on that too, because we do want to make sure we include public-private partnerships. And one of the emerging areas, of course, that we're looking at is the early childhood. And so much of that is delivered by the private system. And so I wouldn't want to exclude them. And I think we've, in many ways, sort of made a choice that we want to continue to offer choices to families for their young children. And so we wouldn't want to say that we're only going to look at the public sector part of it.
Senator Carlson?
And Madam Chair, and Senator Gerlach and Senator Roebling, that if that is our legislative intent, is not to visit more regulation on the independence of non-public education schools. If that's our legislative intent here for this revision or this removing of the word public, I'm absolutely in support of it.
Is there a further discussion on the Gerlach motion, and that would change the name of it and also delete public on line 17, Senator Gerlach?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Is there further discussion or questions, Senator Gerlach?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My second point is quite simple, actually. And my first reaction would be, okay, well, where is our committee falling down? I mean, isn't this the job of the education committee to be putting together this? But I understand we get commissions, we get people involved, we get more information from the outside, pull this together. So we've got that. On line 1.6, we have that it's established to provide a 10-year plan. And I guess, Senator Rummel, I would contend that it's the committee's job, the legislature's job, to provide, but it would be the role of the commission to propose. So a minor change, but I would like your comment, and I'd like to propose that on line 1.6 we strike the word provide and insert propose a 10-year plan.
Madam Chair, I have no objection. because
Senator Gerlach moves that that amendment. I'm looking for other places where that you may want to.
Madam Chair, on line 2.17, in preparing the proposal for the tenure.
Where are you looking, Senator Rummel?
Page 2, line 17.
No, I think plan is okay there. It's okay. Just this notion of providing as opposed to proposing, I think, that Senator Gerlach is talking about. But I don't think there's...
Madam Chair?
Mr. Bodern.
On page 2, line 32, Senator Gerlach's amendment is actually consistent with the way this is worded. The commission must recommend to the legislature a 10-year plan. So that would be consistent with a proposal.
Right. I think that's fine. So we have Senator Gerlach moving to amend on line 1-6, strike provide and insert propose. Favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Gerlach, does she have something else?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Rummel, one thing that's always kind of bothered me in the way we structure the membership with legislative members, and that is I don't think it's appropriate that a majority party should name who on the minority party is represented on these. And we've had this discussion not this year, but we've had it in past years. The way your bill is written, the Committee on Rules and Administration, which is governed by the majority party, would decide which minority member will serve on this. And that can sometimes, I mean, those it's a political environment here, and we make decisions based on politics. And I've always thought that if we want true bipartisanship participation, that it is not only important but imperative that the minority party select their own representatives to these, and that I don't have wording here, but that it should in some way, shape, or form reflect that the minority leader ought to select the minority member rather than the committee. What is your take on that, and how do you feel about that?
I have no problem with it, frankly.
Right. And Senator Rummel, we have kind of gone back and forth over that, and sometimes it's not just been a matter of the minority leader appointing them, but we've done it. Sometimes we've said if it is a long-term appointment that the subcommittee is the appropriate entity in the Senate, at least. But they don't frequently meet. If an appointment is made during the interim, the appointing structure in the House is a little bit different because a speaker can act at any time. But I would support that. I mean, I think you're
so informal.
I mean, it can go either way, and we've done it either way, but I have no problem with inserting that here, that the two senators appointed by the subcommittee on committees of the Senate Committee on Rules and Administration from the majority party, and two members of the minority caucus appointed by the minority leader, two representatives appointed by the Speaker of the House from the majority party, and two members of the minority caucus appointed by the minority leader. Senator Gerlach moves that amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Bodern.
There is also language in paragraph B that refers to those appointments, and if it would be all right with you, I would just suggest that you instruct me to provide
appointing
the conforming language.
Yes, conforming language that would refer to the appointing authorities. And Senator Rummel, I think when we, particularly on these kinds of bodies, as opposed to not only the authority but the responsibility of either the speaker and or the subcommittee on committees in the Senate for committee membership, where they have an additional authority or responsibility to make sure that There is balance in standing committees, and, you know, it's not all women on a committee, and, you know, something really nice like that or something, you know, that there's an additional requirement there that I don't think we'd ever want to take away. But on groups like this, it seems to me that you really want to have everybody to have skin in the game, and
that's
for
right.
people to have the support of their leader, whether it is the majority leader or the minority leader, I think that improves the strength of the.
I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Okay, so we have that motion from Senator Gerlach. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Any further discussion? Senator Rolsing.
Madam Chair, Senator Rummel, under appropriations, $20,000 seems pretty small for any kind of a staff or technical assistance. I just wonder if.
Right now, this is an establishment bill, and we prepared the bill before we knew whether or not what we hope it will happen, that in the Finance Committee, if it moves forward, that it will be whether it has a potential of accessing, for example, the innovation dollars from the stimulus package, or whether or not there is some other opportunity for dollars. The bill, as you notice, does allow us to accept grants and funding, and I understand that there are some people in the wings that are willing to help us get started if we should be successful in passing this bill.
Senator Rummel, in your original bills, did you have a appropriation line? The appropriation you had was for the original one was in Senate File 1113, and in 11. What did you have in 1109?
Yep.
Nothing.
No. We were getting different signals from different groups, and so we were simply establishing it at that point.
Senator Roma, I think you'd be better off with having a blank there.
I appreciate that. Thank you. We can
Senator Carlson moves to strike the $20,000 in line 4-7 and in 4-8, and then you can have a better analysis of it as you move forward. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Any further questions for Senator Rummel on Senate File 1113 as amended? Senator Roebling.
Thank you. And I'm just speculating because we did these both on the same day, so they're fresh in my memory, but wanting to make sure that Senator Wieger's committee does not overlap much with Senator Rummel's proposal.
Mm-hmm.
I realize that the P20 committee is probably more concerned about movement of students from one level of education to another.
Mm-hmm.
But this is going to do that too. So I just don't want to duplicate our efforts here.
But Senator Roebling, I share that same concern, and I think what our job is in this committee is to make sure that the structures, even if they are eventually competing, that as they go forward from this committee, that they work, and that the Committee on Education and Finance, number one, makes a choice between them if they are duplicative, and secondly, whether we can afford any of them.
Mm-hmm.
And but what will they have from the work of this committee is, we did make a policy decision with regard to taking out public, but I think that this is the first committee we can have a wide-ranging thing. But otherwise, it's to make sure that the bill will work if it takes place. So, I mean, I think there was competition between both of Senator Wieger's bills, but I didn't feel like I should vote for one and against the other without having it fully evaluated by the Committee on Education, Education Finance, and Higher Education. It's kind of where I came down. I don't think they can do all three, quite frankly.
Oh, I don't think so.
Even if we did have the money, I'm not sure it would be a good investment in if we did all three. Senator Carlson?
Madam Chair and Senator Rummel, I think I understand the differences or some parts of the differences between, and I did hear arrive late, so I didn't get to hear all of Senator Wieger's bill, but we're establishing a commission in your bill primarily of legislators with some public members. In the Wieger bill, at least the 954, we're establishing an oversight committee which actually appoints the persons who will be working on that commission. And from there on, it looks like they're going to be overlapping a lot of functions. And I haven't necessarily, I agree with the chair here that we don't want to stop one or the other, but I'm hoping that there'll be some merging of the different attributes. And with our last testifier talking about the seesaw of education policy, I'm also hoping that the appointments don't cause more seesawing, because the potential here is an awful lot of switching of members every 2 years, and also maybe even over the overriding, as Senator Gerlach might say, the politics involved or the perspective involved, because we have people who will have to be replaced probably every 2 years. And
well, Senator Carlson, if we could extend Senate terms to 6 years and House terms to 4 years, that probably wouldn't be a problem, but I don't see that happening anytime soon.
And Madam Chair, that's exactly what I mean. In the case of the Wieger bill, and I don't see the term of appointment here. I think that's a shorter term commission, but at least that commission will have continuous membership until they give their presentations.
But Senator Carlson, our election system just can't overcome that at this point. Senator Roebling?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think Senator Rest's effort to balance this committee or this commission with the minority and majority members will have a stabilizing effect on it. Mm-hmm. I do think that you won't necessarily see the big swings then if one party takes over the majority that the other one used to have. I think that it would be better served the way we have it drawn up right now.
Is there anybody else who wishes to speak either in favor or in opposition to Senate File 1113 as amended? Sir?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would like to just, Jerry Robichaud.
Yes, sir.
Like to respond to a couple of the comments that Senator Roebling and Senator Carlson have made regarding the issues of other activities that are taking place. That's one of the concerns that we have also, is that there's a lot of initiatives going out there, but there's no umbrella that is putting all of this together to what does this mean regarding education in the state of Minnesota. As a former superintendent of schools, it was critical that I had a plan of where this district wanted to go. That plan was not built on me as a superintendent of schools. It was built on the organization called that public school at that particular time. So whoever came in as a superintendent at least had a plan in place that they could take a look at. Certainly there would be modifications based on that individual coming into that. But it was critical to have a plan. Right now there's really not a comprehensive picture for education in Minnesota for the next 10 years. There's a lot of things that are happening, but how does this tie into where we want to go? So the P-12 program that was spoken to earlier, that's a piece that we need to incorporate into this kind of a process, this commission that takes a look at. How does that tie into this strategic plan or long-range plan for education in the state of Minnesota? How do parents become more active partners in this educational system? We talk about stakeholders. What about students? We have to incorporate and engage students more actively in this process. So those are the very things that this commission would address, is how do we deal with that duplication or the fragmentation of organizations trying to come up with that picture. Let's get a comprehensive picture together of all parties. that will allow us in the state of Minnesota to know what's in good interest of students. And yes, it'll be modified. A good strategic plan does become modified, but at least there's a picture out there.
Madam Chair, as I, in my opening remarks, the three function of the commission, the first is to be the clearinghouse. And I would assume that that would mean interfacing with groups like the P16 and the various other organizations. And the second is to be the think tank. And then the third is to oversee the Center for Research. So it's that clearinghouse that I think we are missing in many respects. As I just heard from the committee it came from, there's a tremendous amount of work that many of us on our K-12 committee have no idea about that would help inform the decisions we're making. So that's a function I hope it will serve.
Thank you, Senator Roman. Any other questions? Senator, anyone else wish to speak? Senator Carlson moves that Senate File 1113 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Finance. All who may be in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Rumble.
Thank you,
Senator
thank you Madam Chair, and committee members.
Yeah. Senator Rolstein, Senator Gerlach moves. Senator Stevens not here. She is. Oh, sneak in. Senator Stevens moves adoption of the committee report for Senate File 551. Always looking over there. Senator Olsen, we have 551. You want to tell us about 551? And members can look both at the bill and also at the subcommittee report where there was an amendment made. And in effect, it created a new it deleted Section 2, so forget the part where it talks about opening time, and it creates a new Section 2, and Senator Olsen, why don't you tell us what the original Section 1 does and then what this new Section 2 does.
Madam Chair and members, thank you. This originally, 551, was to allow authorizing mail ballots or elections for communities with under 1,000, and it had been law with 400. So now this just expanded it to communities under 1,000. And you're correct about in the election subcommittee there were changes made, and I have Ms. Fraser along to address some of those also.
Ms. Fraser.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Beth Fraser with the Office of the Secretary of State. The subcommittee decided, as you said, to delete Section 2 and to insert this new section, which basically makes a technical change to mail elections on questions, standardizing the timing for those elections, as was done by the committee last year for mail precincts.
Okay, we have Senate File 551 in front of us. Anybody have any questions on the action of the subcommittee? Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to speak either in favor or in opposition to Senate 551? Seeing none, Senator Olsen moves that Senate File 551 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion? Senator Roland.
I'm just trying to make sure that we took out that 8 a.m. start time.
Oh, yeah. That got
this guy means
we had a hard time even getting people to sign on to the bill because that was on there. Even when we told them we were going to take it off as the very first thing. No, it's gone.
Okay, because Madam Chair, in my district where a lot of people commute to work.
It's gone. It's gone.
They go early.
Senator Roebling, it's gone. We have Senator Olsen's motion to that Senate File 551 as amended, which deleted Section 2 of the original bill. Be recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Sieben moves adoption of the subcommittee report on Senate File 659. And 659 deals with election judges. Senator Olsen, you want to tell us what Senate File 659 does as amended?
Thank you, Madam Chair. 659 addresses questions about election judges, whether or not it kind of clarifies that stepchildren or step-siblings may not serve at the same time as a parent, and that's added to parent and child. And so they're just clarifying language about that. They can serve on different shifts. They just can't serve concurrently. And then the second part of the bill looks at the pool for people that can be election judges. And there, we also have an amendment that Mr. Bodern, in reviewing the bill, would put it in a more correct form.
Okay, just a minute while it gets distributed.
And I think I'll turn the part over explaining this new selection for the judges pool over to Ms. Fraser.
Ms. Fraser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Section 2 of the bill has to do with the political parties furnishing lists of individuals that they would like to be election judges. And right now, those lists are furnished to the county auditor. They're often on paper. They're often sign-in sheets from precinct caucuses, hard to read. Occasionally, a list from the entire state has been turned over to the county auditor. And local election officials are required to exhaust this list before they can look at any other candidate. So turning in a list with people from all over the state to a county means that they have to call all of those people. It also means that all of those people have to receive calls from all of those counties or from all of the cities. So it's not there are some problems with the process. What we're suggesting here is that the political parties would provide the list to our office. We would combine the data, precinct the lists, and then send it on to the local jurisdictions, who then could call people from the area and exhaust that list, making sure that the list is more targeted and more appropriate.
Madam Chair.
Question, Senator Roblin.
This is something that some of my township folks were really up in arms about. They were even concerned because they didn't understand how, and I don't know if this solves it or not, but if someone from a township on one side of the county can't quite fill their judge positions, if someone's name wasn't on the list who had, and somehow they just hadn't called in or hadn't gone to a precinct caucus or whatever, that they couldn't call someone who maybe had served and was trained as a judge from the past, but they had to call someone, you know, suppose it's a New Prague precinct, and they had to call someone from Shakopee to serve as a judge in their precinct, where they know they had a person who just didn't get on the list, but they're not allowed to call them. Is that resolved at all?
Ms. Fraser?
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, it is not. That would take changing the language so that there's not a requirement to either first use this list or exhaust the list. That is a proposal that local election officials would support wholeheartedly, but there was some opposition to it in the past. So this proposal does not do that.
But, Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
When you say that this will keep the lists local, what does that mean?
Ms. Fraser?
Madam Chair, Representative Roebling, Senator Roebling. What it means is that for New Prague, they would have to call people from the list who are in the New Prague area, and then they could go on to people that had served previously. Whereas right now, if one of the parties turned over a list of everyone in the state, the statute would require them to call everyone in the state, you know, from Marshall and Fergus Falls, before they could call the reliable election judge who's not on the list.
Okay. So, Senator Roebling. Chair, so in the case of a city, it would be calling other people who live in that city, even if they're not in your precinct. But in the case of a township, would it be just calling other people within your township before you went to the other folks who weren't on the list?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, the townships and school districts are actually exempt from the requirement to have election judges affiliated with political parties. So we're mostly talking about state elections and county and city elections. It depends how the list is dealt with. What we would do is we would precinct the list and send the list to Scott County, for example. And then Scott County is responsible for sending the list to the local appointing jurisdiction. So Scott County would actually decide how many names or which names to send to New Prague or a township. So that decision would be made more locally, but the law requires them to exhaust the list, which means at least contact. They don't have to hire all of those people if they're for some reason not appropriate, but at least contact all of the people on the list before they can look at other applicants.
Ms. Fraser, on the lines 212 to 217, trying to understand that in light of Senator Roebling's question or concern. So by June 15th, the Secretary of State furnishes electronically a list to the county auditor of the appropriate names for each election precinct in the jurisdiction of the appointing authority. So that means for each precinct, including like a township, what does it mean, the appropriate names? Does that mean only people living in the township or the precinct or not?
Madam Chair.
I mean, that's the current law, but I'm just trying to make sure I understand it.
And Madam Chair, the current law was not very clear to some people in my area.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking here. Is there anything we should do there? Because for each election precinct in the jurisdiction of the appointing authority. Now, the county auditor is the appointing authority, but is he or she limited to the names for each, it's the names for rather than within each election precinct. So can you appoint someone from one township to serve in another township if they don't have enough in township number two?
Madam Chair, actually, the county auditor is, in most cases, not the appointing authority. In almost all cases, it's actually the city who is the appointing authority.
What happens to the townships?
The township clerk.
The township clerk. The county auditor would only be the appointing authority for unincorporated areas, I believe.
Okay, so then I see. So then,
unorganized.
But whose names are on that list is what I'm asking, because it says, noting, okay, the political party of each individual, and then the county auditor forwards the names to the appropriate municipal clerk, and it's the appropriate names. Which names are they? Are they people that live in that county, or do they have to be people that live in that township? I think that isn't that what you're asking, Senator Roebling?
Madam Chair, the way that we envision this working is that we would provide a list of names to the county auditor of individuals from that county. And the county,
that county, okay.
And the county auditor would decide which pieces of that list to provide to the municipalities. That may not be exactly how this reads. That's what the intent was.
Okay, so in providing it to the municipality, which includes a township, only is the list only of people that live in that township?
Madam Chair, the way we envision it is the county auditor would make that decision, what list to pass on.
I know, but that's not what it says.
Madam Chair, we may want to amend it then.
Yeah, which I don't understand which which list, which names would go to the appropriate municipal clerk from the county auditor. You understand what I'm saying there? Would the township, let's say, you send them to the township clerk. Township clerk calls those names, and that they are of that township, can't fill the need for election judges from that list. What does the county, what does the township clerk do at that point?
Madam Chair, what they do at that point is they look at other people who weren't on the list. So
reside in the township.
Madam Chair, they do not need to reside in the township to serve as an election judge in that township.
But I think Senator Rowling is saying that's what your constituents encountered. Is that correct or not?
Madam Chair, that's what they would like, because they feel that the people who serve in the township, you know the people as they come in. They're faster at finding their names in the books, and they just thought it was much easier, and especially since they had a number of people.
Ms. Fraser is saying they could do that.
Who didn't? Well, no, they didn't feel they could, because they were told that they couldn't hire anyone not on the list until they had exhausted the list, and the list was for the whole county.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, in that case, the county chose to turn over the entire county list to the township. I think that from local election officials' perspective, the shorter this list, the better, because it means that this is not necessarily a great pool for election judges. It means that they can't go
so
back
to... it does
to
give some discretion to the county auditor here which names go to the township clerk.
Madam Chair, an amendment might do that, and that would probably be appropriate. I'm not sure it does it the way it's currently worded.
It says, look, Peter, it says a list of the appropriate names. It doesn't define who they are.
Well, Madam Chair, no. I'm wondering if we could say the county auditor must promptly
do that.
Forward.
So already doing that then. So does lines 213 and 214 say that when the county auditor is sending along the list of appropriate names for each election precinct in the jurisdiction of the township authority, that means it's people who are in that township. And that does make the list short. And then they can go to other people in the township. Isn't that what that says?
Madam Chair, I'm afraid that what this says is that our office would need to split up the list by township or city, and that it might be more appropriate to say that we will furnish a list electronically to the county auditor, who then would split it up by township or city.
Senator, Mr. Bodden, can you help us here with Senator Roebling's issue? So that I think the goal, and I don't know why people would object to it, but the goal is to give a list in the township or the city so that before they have to go outside of that township, they can go to people who are not on the list, didn't sign up at Precinct Congress, whatever, before they have to go to people outside of the township. That's what your local officials would prefer.
Right. But Madam Chair, the only thing I'm concerned about, if you had a township that didn't send any, you know, Democratic names or any Republican names in, then you might, I don't know how you'd assure balance unless maybe you went outside of the area. I know we need some of the balance issues too. Mm-hmm. So before we let the township clerk pick people from the township, we have to satisfy some of those political balance issues, do we not? Or how does it work?
Ms. Fraser?
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, the party balance issues don't have to be, there needs to be party balance for except for township and school district elections. There needs to be party balance. But that doesn't mean that they need to come from these lists. If you, for example, have been a lifelong Republican but are not on the list, you could still serve as an election judge affiliated with the Republican Party. So they could call up Sven and Ole, who have been serving as election judges from different parties forever but aren't on the list, and still do the party balance that's required.
Okay, Madam Chair. I think that's really where my township clerks were going, because they felt really bad that some of their longtime, very good election judges never got on a list because they're not party activists, really. And they couldn't hire them, and they had to go and go off this long list, and they were kind of told that they had to call in the order the list was given to them. And so they were calling people all over the county to come and serve as election judges, and leaving off the local people who had done it previously.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Bodern, let me see if Mr. Bodern can help us. I think Senator Rowland's point is well taken. Mr. Bodern?
Madam Chair, it seems maybe the discretion that's given to the Secretary of the State focuses on page 2, line 13. It's the idea of a list of appropriate names. And if you simply specified what the list must include without providing the discretion to determine the appropriate names, it could read, the Secretary of State shall furnish electronically to the county auditor a list of names of election judges with addresses in the county, noting the political party affiliation of each individual in the list. And then you would leave the discretion with the county auditor if you leave that last sentence in place that says the county auditor must promptly forward the appropriate names to the appropriate municipal clerk. I'm not sure if that's in line with what you're thinking. If I guess the issue is where you leave the discretion.
But Madam maybe Chair? Not with the Secretary of State's office. Senator Olsing?
I agree with you that this looks like it needs an amendment, but also with Senator Roebling's concern, I don't think it clarifies anywhere in here that you can go outside of the list, or maybe I'm missing that, but I'm wondering if that should be part of the amendment. That
Madam Chair,
Ms. Fraser.
Senator Olsen, I believe that's in the next section of statute.
In the next, starting in sub 2, you mean? In section 3, the current law language?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, on 2.29.
So if they only provided the names in the precinct, in the township, they could then go up to other people. But if we, I don't know that we need to make a change then, Senator Roebling.
Well, Madam Chair, I think we're still sending the whole county list at this point, or the county auditor might be sending the whole county list to all the clerks that run the elections, and because we're not saying what are the appropriate names for them to receive. If we said that it was appropriate that they receive the names of those who reside within their precinct, that or within their municipal boundary or their township, I guess I would be willing to go into municipal boundary and township. I mean, even some townships have more than one polling place. Mm-hmm. But I'm just concerned about them getting the whole county list and thinking they have to call off of that whole list and exhaust it all before they can ask anybody else.
Senator Sieben?
It appears that the language on 2.30 that's in current statute is the problem, where it says that if additional election judges are required after all listed names have been exhausted. So I wonder if we could strike after all listed names have been exhausted to help make it more clear that you don't need to call everyone on the list if you want to use people who are off the list.
Right. But I think maybe, Madam Chair, that the problem is
in
the
new... What line was that? Sorry.
2.30.
Madam Chair, I think the problem might be in the new language on 216 and 17, where it says the county auditor must promptly forward the appropriate names to the appropriate municipal clerk. we should describe what the appropriate names would be. If we could describe that, then once they use that list of appropriate names for their area, for their, then this is not a problem. Then they would go to off the list. They'd be done with the list.
Okay.
So I don't know how to describe the appropriate names.
On that point, though, Madam Chair.
Senator Lurie.
I agree, and I think that the flexibility piece is kind of important, and that's what we're trying to get at here. I mean, we wouldn't want – I do have a concern also that the counties would just think, well, they told us to send the whole list, and that's not what we mean. But I do think they have – I think we more need to just say – you know, that the counties need to decide themselves what's appropriate. I mean, it might be a couple of surrounding townships. I mean, I certainly know more than just Carrick Township residents. I'd be a good Nickerson judge as well. You know, and each county knows that stuff better. You know, I think we'd have a hard time defining right here the right criteria that's appropriate for every county. So, I mean, maybe we just specify more that the counties, you really do have some discretion here in terms of what you send. And I, this might not state that clearly enough for the counties to understand that we're trying to tell them that they have discretion. And then the townships would also be able to work with their counties and point to it and say, no, you have discretion. Don't do this to us. Don't send us the whole list, because if you do, this is what happens. And it would maybe foster a better discussion of what is appropriate in each county. I don't know. Is that starting to address your concerns, Senator Roebling, Madam Chair?
Senator Lurie?
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling?
I know what he's saying, and I want them to have the discretion. So saying the appropriate names would be appropriate if they didn't just assume it's the whole darn list from the whole county.
Madam Chair?
Senator Olsen?
I think I might want to talk with the Association of Minnesota Townships, and if this were to be laid on the table to mm-hmm. get this worked out, are we going to have opportunities? I know we're butting up against deadlines. I mean, would we still be able to work through it, or what
I think
do you think?
That would be fine, but you have an amendment.
Yes, I would like to address.
Maybe we can talk about this amendment, and then lay the bill over, and then have some further discussion just to make sure that this language does work in response to the concerns brought up by Senator Roebling. And we may indeed find that it does work. Okay.
Okay.
So let's leave that issue. Senator Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, and I think I like what Senator Seaman said, and to help to answer the question, I see that a list starts up at the county auditor and a list of the appropriate names for each precinct. Then down below, in starting somewhere in there, but at least in 226, appointments shall be made from the lists furnished pursuant to Subdivision 1. And I think if I'm hearing Senator Roebling correctly, she said she would like to be able to go outside the list as soon as the local or the precinct people have been exhausted. And if we go back up to that each election precinct, I mean, this list is going to be denoted by precinct, by party, by, you know, all of the data going along with it. If we have it so that the precinct is the end of the line for having to consider all of those people, and then from after the precinct list has been gone through, then allow to go anywhere. And because those lists all have the precincts, you're going to go to the next adjoining precinct, or you're going to go somewhere else, next municipality. So as soon as your locals are, your requirement is filled by the locals, then you can go to any list you wish. Does that work?
Senator Roebling?
Or outside the list, if they have those election judges who just didn't make the list. Maybe it could just be solved. Maybe we could leave this language. If the direction from the Secretary of State's office to the county auditors would be that they choose the appropriate names to send out to each of their municipalities or their townships, that they can break it down, and not that they read this and think they have to forward the whole list that you have sent to them for their county. And maybe it's as simple as that, because but we know that in our election law, counties interpret the law very differently. And so if we can be as precise as possible in the law, it's easiest. But if there would be a policy that would come from the Secretary of State's office, it would probably resolve the issue too. That just to make sure that they understand.
We need to put that in statute.
It probably should be in statute. Then it's not debatable, especially if Secretary of State's change in policies and their offices change.
Mr. Bodden, could we do something like that quickly here, or should we take Senator Olsen's suggestion and lay that issue aside and come back to the bill? We'll deal with this issue, but.
Madam Chair, I think one small amendment that might address some of Senator Roebling's concerns, at least as far as what list the county auditor must provide, would be on page 2, line 17, after names, insert, for each precinct. That way the list provided to the municipal clerks would not.
Then they would only have to exhaust that list before they could go to names outside off the list, because there's a reference to that subdivision. Senator Roebling, shall we try that and move on the bill? And then if that doesn't work, then we can hear from the townships and make a slight change on an amendment on the floor if it doesn't work.
Senator Roebling? I'm wondering if we want to give them any more flexibility and say for each precinct or municipality, and then they can decide if they want to do it by a whole city or not.
Madam Chair, Ms. Fraser has an idea that might work also.
Ms. Fraser?
Madam Chair, if on 2.30, if it said are required after all listed names in that municipality have been exhausted, then it doesn't matter what list the county sends. They could send the whole county list. The municipality is only required to contact the people in that municipality. They would then have the option to call other people or to continue using the list.
Senator Roebling, what do you think of that?
That might be a good idea, except what do we call townships?
They're municipalities.
Are they called municipalities too? Okay, mm-hmm. That sounds good, actually.
How about that?
Sounds simple, Madam Chair.
Senator Olsen moves on line 230 after names, insert in that municipality. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Then we have section, and if it doesn't work, we can revisit it on the floor, Senator Roebling. We have the A3 amendment, and
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Olsen, what does this do?
Well, this part of the bill may be a little controversial. It takes away the requirement for initialing ballots. And in my townships, you know, they're not as busy as the folks in Minneapolis or some of the more populated areas. So I was talking to some of those folks, and they thought it's important to initial the back of the ballots. But I suspect any kind of a precinct that has a lot of action going on, that's just an extra step. So so that's what Section 4 is. We're kind of eliminating the requirement, or we are eliminating the requirement to initial the back of the ballot. And that's what I'll have Mr. Bodden address the A3 amendment, because it goes into a little more detail than.
Didn't we, isn't that in another bill to take away the requirement to initial a ballot?
Madam Chair, it's on
Mr. Bodden.
Page 3, Section 4. Is the operative provision that contains the policy there and eliminates the requirement to initial the backs of the ballots. Everything you see on the A3 amendment is intended to be a conforming, just picks up the additional references in statute to that requirement.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. Where is I'm not following you.
If you look on page 3 of the bill, Section 4 contains the requirement to, or eliminates the requirement to, initial the ballots.
Yes, okay. And so, Mr. Bodden, what does this do then?
The A3 amendment contains conforming amendments to other sections of statute that refer back to that requirement.
I see. Okay. So this is a technical conforming issue. All those in favor of that motion, please.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olsen's going to make the motion, but Mr. Bodern.
And Ms. Fraser did point out the need for there's one additional change you could make on the A3 amendment. On page 1, line 22, strike still, and then the sentence will read properly.
Okay. That's incorporated in Senator Olsen's motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have Senate file 659 as amended.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
I just on this last amendment with the initialing, did it serve us any purpose at all in the recount? I mean, why did we have it in the first place that ballots had to be initialed?
Senator Roebling, I think it went back to the days when we had only paper ballots. And then the argument was made it's an extra step that's no longer needed and doesn't help. Now some people disagreed with that, but it prevailed in the subcommittee. Any further discussion? Anybody want to testify in favor or in opposition to 659? Seeing none, Senator Olsen moves that Senate file 659 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, I appreciate that. That was some good work on the fly there.
Okay. So we will meet Monday, Wednesday, and Friday of next week. I think on Friday, what we will attempt to do is the only bills we will be hearing are those of the members of this committee. We would hope that would encourage attendance. There being no further, and we will hear other people's bills on Monday and Wednesday, and including maybe bills of members who are here today. Those in favor, I mean, you don't have to have that. There being no further business, we stand adjourned. Thank you very much for your time today.